Are you done texting, Jonathan?
I'm pulling up facts.
Okay. I like your chemistry.
Thanks.
You guys have good chemistry.
We've been friends for a long time.
You can tell.
And we've never even kissed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a long future ahead of you.
Right, right.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
podcast where we answer questions about things you question.
That's definitely our tagline. We don't change it every week. This week we have a very special guest who needs no introduction, but I should do that anyway because otherwise they won't know where to come in. Our guest this week is Josh Clark. Everybody at home clap for Josh Clark.
Oh, thanks. I hear like a lot of applause. That's nice.
Yeah. Uproarious at 6 a.m. on Wednesday.
Everyone listens to this podcast at the same exact time.
Right.
No, Josh, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here, you guys.
Well, of course. You have a new podcast out that we should probably talk about real quick. It's called The End of the World
with Josh Clark.
Yeah, don't forget that part. What's the podcast about?
It's about, well, some pretty big questions. It asks, it explores whether we're alone in the universe. If we are alone in the universe, have we always been alone, or did something happen to all the other aliens, all the other intelligent life? And if something happened to all the other intelligent life, does that mean something's going to happen to us? And it kind of dives into what could possibly happen to us. And it turns out there's a lot of things that could happen to us. Things like nuclear war and climate change, stuff we tend to think of as, you know, being the ultimate catastrophes, actually don't register on the scale of the things that are real threats to us, things that could actually wipe humanity out forever. And it's really heavy, but I'm accompanied by some really great sound design by a guy named Kevin Senzaki and a really great score by a composer named Point Lobo. And they definitely soften it, mellow it out, make it just a lot more listenable. So I think the three of us together came together to make something special, if you ask me. It's a 10-part series, and the point of it is to get everybody energized to actually take on the existential risks, these threats that could wipe us out, that are really truly coming our way that most people aren't talking about right now.
Yep.
Yeah, I was listening to it as I was going to Burger King, something really lame. I was like, oh, I'll pop on Josh's new podcast. And then I'm sitting there in my minivan, like having an existential crisis.
Yeah, gripping your steering wheel. It's like an existential lullaby is how I would refer to it.
Yeah.
It's like someone, you know, your mom combing your hair and saying like, we're all going to die.
Yeah. It sounds like it came through loud and clear then.
Yeah. It is a really good podcast.
Thank
so
you.
Go listen to it.
Thanks
people.
A lot.
If you haven't, I'd be surprised if people didn't know that it's out there. But sort of the backdrop of that podcast, and I don't want to like put words in your mouth, but part of the backdrop is the idea of post-humanism.
Mm-hmm.
That comes up here and there throughout the podcast in terms of looking at humans from an objective point of view, and transhumanism, where what if we just upload our brains to the computer, or what if we aren't like carbon-based beings anymore? And that's what we're here to discuss today, is post-humanism, and we invited Josh to help us out. So real fast, I do want to say that I got a lot of information from Dr. Francesca Fernando.
Nice. Fernando.
I can't roll my R's very well. But she is like, she does the best job that I found out there. She's like the one person out there talking about post-humanism and putting her face out there. So when I talk about things, she's just chef's kiss. So she also got really cool makeup. If you watch her on YouTube, she's got like, I don't know what you want.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she has makeup tutorials. She has makeup tutorials and post-humanism.
Yeah. That'd be like the antithesis of...
It's coming up, man. 2020 is the next trend. You're going to see Cyborg. You got that Cyborg eye. You got to get that flip
yeah,
up.
That, the, yeah, that John Mayer smoky eye thing.
Yeah. A little smoky eye with a radioactive glow.
Yeah. It's called human enhancements.
Mm-hmm.
But before we talk about post-humanism, because it's this huge topic, post-humanism, I kind of mentioned it already, is kind of the idea that humans aren't that special. Like, they're just kind of a species that exists on Earth, right?
Right.
Am I interpreting this correctly?
I think I'm pretty good.
That is kind of the basis of it, because everything that extends from that idea is that we can, that means that we can mess around with ourselves to improve ourselves or make ourselves better.
Yeah. And sort of, it is very big, and it was very hard for me to understand at first, but kind of what got me there was the idea of humanism. And once you understand that, it might be a little bit easier to understand post-humanism. So we'll start there. Humanism started, it was like a movement, a philosophical movement throughout the 1200s to the 1500s during the Renaissance. And it wasn't coined until the 1800s when there was sort of a resurgence in the humanism thinking. And normally I wouldn't go to the Oxford Dictionary to define things, but they I know, it sucks. It's stupid.
That's a really awesome way to start a sentence where it's going to be followed by a definition.
I know, but they laid out like the three core values that makes up humanism, which is that one, humans are autonomous from nature, given the intellectual facilities of the mind that controls the body. Two, uniquely capable of and motivated by speech and reason. And three, an exceptional animal that is superior to all other creatures.
Okay, so let me just jump in real quick,
please.
Because I have a more... This is a website I don't know if it's accredited, but it's called the Urban Dictionary.
Okay.
So they have humanism defined as the doctrine that people's duty is to promote human welfare. And that was uploaded by Zarqua 909090.
Oh, so you know it's they got a source on there?
Yeah, no, he's got 129 likes.
Plus he does a really good makeup tutorial on YouTube.
He does a fantastic makeup tutorial. If you want to subscribe, I'll give that plug there.
So anyway, humanism is basically the idea that we are special, we are important, we are individuals, and we're more important than any other creature on Earth. We are independent from our environment. We enact change. We start change. And kind of from my perspective, once you look outward into the universe, it's kind of hard to keep this humanism view. Like, this is
you feel smaller and smaller.
You feel smaller, and it's like this scale that you can't even imagine, that humans are just so tiny. Mm-hmm. Once you like go outside of our solar system.
But that depends on what you feel like you find in the solar system. And if you find nothing in the solar system, the galaxy,
that's
the
true.
Universe, that appears to have intelligence, and it suggests that we're the only thing that have intelligence, then you go from questioning humanism to humanism times a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you come to think like, well, if we're the only intelligent life in the universe, that would make humans the most special beings in the entire universe.
Which scares me.
Which sounds ridiculous.
It does.
It sounds gross.
People have a hard time accepting that. The idea that we could be the most special things in the universe, which is why people bend over backwards to answer the Fermi paradox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is the first episode of your series, right?
It is, which I guess I should say the Fermi paradox is this observation that the universe is so huge and so old that it's basically mathematically impossible that we wouldn't be fully aware that there's alien life everywhere, that it would have colonized the galaxy over and over and over again from evolving elsewhere and then moving around over the years, over the billions of years. And the fact that we don't suggests that we are the only intelligent life in the universe.
So given that perspective, humanism certainly makes sense.
It does. It does in that respect, yes.
I also think that it's influenced our, at least Western culture, quite a bit. Like, we were joking about YouTube, but that's like why we have kids that they're like, when I grow up, I want to be a YouTuber.
Yeah.
Like, it's because of humanism influencing the way that we live, or like reality TV. It's humanism thinking in my mind.
It is, which reality TV, I think, then is kind of a knock against humanism.
Yeah.
It's an argument against humanism is reality TV.
Or politics lately, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely. There's a lot of schools of thought on humanism. I won't spend too much time on that because that's not what our episode's about. This came from AmericanHumanist.org, which I only point out because their tagline is "Good without a God, advocating progressive values and equality for humanists, atheists, and free thinkers." I'm glad there's someone out there fighting for the atheists.
For that lobby.
Did you know that if you served in the military and you're an atheist and you're buried in a military cemetery, You have the right to have the atomic symbol on your headstone rather than a religious symbol. Yeah. And I'm not sure who fought for that or how they got it through, but I feel like in the 60s or 70s, there was a secular humanist atheist movement to make sure that soldiers who were atheists who gave their life for their country were able to be recognized for what they thought in life, what they believed.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to tell me they have a VIP section. There's like a little plot of land for atheists.
It's on a mound. It's raised just a little more than the rest.
Just a little higher to God.
To teach them a lesson once and for all.
Yeah.
They're going to need all the help they can get. But some of the other schools of thought on humanism are literary humanism, Renaissance humanism, like we already talked about, Western culture humanism, which dives into science, politics, ethics, laws, that sort of thing. Philosophical humanism, Christian humanism, which is kind of counterintuitive to their thing that says good without a God. Modern humanism, which their definition was like, there's no such thing as the supernatural, just everything can be explained by science. That seemed out of place, but that there's secular humanism, which is philosophy and free thought, and then religious humanism. So it doesn't just have to be Christianity. Post-humanism, though, takes that idea, turns it on its head, as you would imagine by the name. It kind of rose up as a literary criticism in the 1960s. A lot of post things, postmodernism.
Post Malone.
It's probably boring. Rock.
Yeah.
But it really gave rise in the 1960s for political reasons. The phrase wasn't actually coined until the 1980s as people started to observe it more. And then really gave rise in the 90s along with transhumanism. And posthumanism is physically, chemically, and biologically enmeshed and dependent on the environment, moved to action through interactions that generate effects, habits, and reason, and possessing no attribute that is uniquely human, but is instead made up of a larger evolving ecosystem. So, as Dr. Ferrando puts it,
Ferrando. Thank you.
I don't want to do it because I can't roll my R's well.
I had no idea who you were talking about.
She says that it's an existential approach, and it should be an open notion that should come to include things like evolution, cybernetic enhancements, ecology, the environment, all kinds of things. Kind of the basic thought, again, is that we're not special. We are just part of the Earth. We are another species on the Earth, and we don't enact change. We just participate in the change that's going on in the ecosystem. Hmm. Dr. Ferrando.
Thank you.
I feel like I sound like an idiot trying to force my R's.
I think you just invented a new syllable.
Yeah, this is a beautiful moment.
Thanks. This will be marked down in the history books as a new syllable. So she suggests
that... So add that to the humanism side.
Chalk went up to them.
1 point for us. Yeah.
So anyway, she suggests that posthumanism branched from postmodernism, which was a movement to deconstruct the human and their privilege over other species, essentially. It serves as a criticism to the humanism point of view, of course, which leads to further deconstructions of things like race or gender, sexuality, nationality. That's what at least Dr. Ferrando, just going to say it like that from now on. I see that look in your eyes.
I'll let you go this time.
That's what she really focuses on, which kind of makes sense as to why this rose up in the 60s with the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. White folk thought we were better than African Americans, and that's not right. The post-human view is that we're all humans, so treat everyone the same.
And there seems to be a struggle like that still going on today between humanism and post-humanism. Although most humanists that I have ever encountered don't seem to strike me as racist necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Although they probably would assert that we do have dominance over any non-intelligent life forms, which seems wrong to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me as well, as I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
There you go. It's the same kind of concept.
It like plays into that a little bit too. You posted an article a while back too. I think I saved it and read it about like the argument for why eating animals is wrong no matter what.
Yeah.
And I forget. I'll have to find that.
Yeah, I don't recall that one. Was it on one of the reading lists?
Yeah, it was on one of your reading lists. Huh. It was cool, and I had to
go back
and
reread it because it didn't stick.
But posthumanism, really, the point of it is to break down the walls that we have between like human and animal relationships, like we kind of already talked about, and even further human-machine relationships, or just human and non-human relationships, like nature or the universe, bacteria, whatever. And lastly, posthumanism is meant to remove ourselves from the traditional thought when looking at everything, like everything, from art to science to politics to conservationism to like veganism. Like, why do we eat animals? Well, we always have. Do we
so have I want to be buff and tough, Nick.
What? You want to be buff and tough?
Yeah.
Good luck, vegan.
On my beans.
I've seen South Park.
Yeah.
But
sorry, guys.
You're fine.
No, it's staying in. This is gold. People have been waiting for this for years.
The joke got me. All right. Sorry.
So anyway, posthumanism. So I try to think of scenarios where we could compare the humanism and the posthumanism views on this argument, because mm-hmm. I think the argument, maybe I'm putting too much into this, is posthumanism a better way of looking at things like politics or art or science than humanism? So I'll let you guys decide. I have a couple scenarios that I came up with. One example that Dr. Ferrando came up with was with AI. So one thing that she looked at when doing her dissertation was, when people are developing AI, does the humanist point of view change the way that they program the AI? Like, does their age or their sex or their nationality affect the way that they're coding it? Which we kind of talked about on our AI. We did an episode on AI. Is mm-hmm. AI racist?
And really, it's just like the levels of the level of racism you could reach is just unfounded now, because you could be ageist against a robot who's only 1,000 years old versus 2,000.
Yeah.
So really pushing the boundaries to really...
And well, you'll learn someday, robot, when you hit 1500.
Yeah.
When you're older. But when I think back to, what was that app called? It was like Face App or something. What was it called?
Yeah. Face App you'd take a picture of your face and it would...
It would make you hotter. It was the hotter button.
It would make you hotter, but it would make you whiter.
Right.
Oh, really?
And
yeah.
From a humanist point of view, I look at that and I say, well, a bunch of white dudes were coding it, unfortunately. So that's how that got worked into the code. Mm-hmm. It's not the computer's fault.
Yeah, like originally emoji was all white from what I understand, and they finally were like, well, maybe we should come up with something like yellow.
Yeah, let's do the Simpsons treatment. But if you also look at something like global warming, a humanist might say, well, I'm not contributing to it, so I trust everyone else not to contribute to it.
That's garbage, though.
Right. So a post-humanist view might be, well, humans as a species are accelerating global warming.
Yep.
That's one of the critiques, though, is that there's no accountability to it. So you look at, like, BP, who has oil spills going down in the Gulf of Mexico.
But why can't there be a humanist perspective of, we're the best, so we have to preserve ourselves by preventing climate change?
You'd think, but capitalism wins out.
That's funny. That's kind of the point of that podcast series I just released. I mean, mm-hmm. it's basically like we can do better and we need to do better, or else we're not going to have a chance to do better much longer. So now's the time to start doing better, and not just for ourselves, but for, you know, life on Earth, and also
centuries out. Yeah.
Millennia. But also our descendants as well. Yeah. Not just centuries, millions, billions of years into the future. Like, there's potentially sextillion human lives left. And if we don't do something to save ourselves, those lives will never happen. And so in a certain way, we're accountable for them, for their lives too. So not only do we need to take care of each other and the other life we share the planet with, but also the life that hasn't come down the pike yet in the future of humanity.
Yeah.
Way to guilt trip me on that one. Jeez.
Well, I give everybody like a 1 or 2 month grace period, and then then if they're not doing something by then, they're bad people.
They got to take action. Got it.
Right.
So I'll expect an email from you in 2 months, mm-hmm. making sure that I'm active. All right.
Sent by a scoldy AI. That's ageist.
Yep. And yeah, don't be ageist. We could do a $2,000. Yeah. 2,000-year-old.
But going back to the scenarios, if you look at something political, and I'm trying to find something not, like, controversial, even though we still have this problem going on
today. Good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah.
I know.
Just dive in. I don't care.
Well, if I go... Like,
they know we're progressive. So.
If you go back to the 60s, you look at the civil rights movement, you could ask the question, why do we have segregation? And a humanist might say that's just the way we've always done it.
Or what's his face? Jesse Lee Peterson?
Oh, Jesse Lee Peterson. Do you know who that is, Josh?
No, I don't.
Oh, we've got a gift for you after this.
Oh, good.
He's not a good person. So anyway, humanists might say that's the way we've always done it, and I, as an individual, am superior. Whereas a post-humanist might look at that and say, we're all one species, yada, yada, treat everyone the same. Mm-hmm. Which I think was important during the 60s, and I think it might even be important now with the rise of neo-Nazism, white nationalism, all that stuff going on in America. But that's just me getting up on a soapbox, trying to look cool for Josh Clark. So
you're doing great.
Yeah. You look very cool.
I think you're both very cool, yeah.
Thank you.
So there's also, like, if you get into animal rights, we've kind of already discussed that. Why do we eat animals? Well, it's just the way we've always done it. Do we have to?
No. They're delicious. I get it.
They are. Like, have you had Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
You have.
Back in the day. My goal is...
A long time ago.
I like to get people to make responsible decisions and stuff, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you what to eat.
Yeah.
That gives people a bad rap. Like, you do you. I'll
you
do me.
You do you, boo.
Huh.
That's a very humanist view of you.
Is that?
You trust other humans to make the best decision? That is pretty humanist. No.
But I hate the idea of trying to guilt somebody into not eating food that they enjoy.
But mm-hmm. I think what you're talking about here, Nick, is like there's this right now there's this push and pull between this is how it's always been or this is right, this is we've always done it this way, and mm-hmm. no, this is wrong. We need to change it. There's definitely that tug of war that's going on right now. I had no idea it was humanism and post-humanism. I didn't have a name for it, but that makes total sense.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because, like, I don't think there's a right way to argue. I think that it's a mixture of both. Like with the BP example, they're dumping oil in there. That's not, I personally wouldn't look at that as a human's fault. I would look at that as a BP fault, right. And they need to fix that.
Yes. Well, the problem is that we're making corporations more and more human-like. So
that's true.
If their goal, and it's not wrong to have your main goal profit.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. If you, like, it depends on if you follow that up with at any cost.
Yeah.
That's when it kind of crosses the line.
I agree. Yeah. I'm saying that their goal is profit at any cost for most giant corporations.
Yeah.
And that turns into dangerous. Lobbying, which influences people's ideas in our
right.
country.
Very humanist.
Money and politics. Yeah, very humanist. And then beyond that, what's tough is that we have such terrible, like, memories. We can't remember something 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to really, like, think forward in the same sense. So how can you convince someone to think about their children thousands of generations away
when
they're worried
about themselves?
Yeah.
It's very tough.
And I think that part of the arguments that Dr. Ferrando makes is this is important for the future. When we start getting into transhumanism, which we'll talk about because I don't think we talked about that yet, but when we start having robots that have AI as intelligent as a human, or we start making cybernetic enhancements to humans, her argument is that the humanist view is if you have a cybernetic enhancement, you're less human. And are we going to treat those people differently because they are quote-unquote less human? Well, what makes a human?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the post-humanism view is trying to strive for on that. Looking forward to when we finally have those advancements, how are we going to treat the robot butler that we've uploaded our grandma into?
Right. Which we may want to be careful with mistreating robots in the future because, as every six-year-old knows, they can karate chop you right in two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we may want to treat them rather well, actually.
Yeah.
And this is the first I've heard of this. Everything I've run into is just basically like, no, anything that runs on artificial intelligence is eventually going to run the show if we don't figure out how to control it now.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff that Dr. Fran, she has a good like mini series on YouTube where she talks about this for a little bit, especially with transhumanism, mm-hmm. First of all, how are we going to treat them? But are we going to eventually become the robots? Like, are we going to like voluntarily upload our minds into computers?
That was one of my favorite parts of Josh's first episode too.
Yeah.
Was,
it's becoming non-carbon based beings, basically. Yeah.
Right. Post-biology.
Exactly. Post-biology. That's a much better way to put it than I was.
Well, it's not mine. I picked it up from somebody else.
Yeah. But then there's a little bit of critique on post-humanism that I don't really know how I feel about it. There's one person whose name I'm going to butcher, and I'm very sorry. It's Zakiya Iman Jackson. His critique of post-humanism is that if we start ignoring the cultural differences that make us individuals, we'll try to homogenize humanity, and we lose a lot of the nationality or traditions there that make humans individuals. He says it returns us to a Eurocentric transcendentalism long challenged, which I think is kind of important to consider because we can't just like ignore the traditions that some cultures hold true. But at the same time, like some cultures have foot binding, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, cultures don't have to automatically be completely moral. But beyond that, what makes that tough is you could also get into territory as that to have that argument used for people that are that think that white is their culture, and it's not because they're usually Irish or German or whatever Americans.
Yeah. So they want to get rid of, like, actively get rid of those traditions.
Yeah, and we live in a gray world, and everyone tries to see everything black and white. So
yeah, but it's a mix of the two.
It is, and can't you mix humanism and transhumanism, or are they so at odds that there's just no? It's not a spectrum. It's binary.
I just think that I want to dive headfirst into robot culture so much, cyborg culture.
You want to lay the groundwork for treating them right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you don't want to like slap your toaster now because it burns your toast later on when it gets AI. But what I always find, and I'm sure
Slap Your Toaster is a good pop punk band too.
Really?
Is that a real band? No, you just make
No, it would be.
Oh, okay. That's our band name. We need to get a band name list going. But I think you're right. We need to meld the two, but like every time that I'm researching something about psychology or philosophy, it's always like this polar divide where people just can't be like, well, you're right on that subject, but I don't agree with you on this subject. It's like, nope, you're wrong. Right. You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. My stuff is right. And I think that's very dangerous because you need to like compare ideas. And I think that there is accountability in humanism, but looking to the future, I think post-humanism is the way to go. You gotta separate yourself from the individual and consider how can I keep the earth alive and not destroy the whole thing.
Easy peasy.
I think also, like, just by nature of the evidence that's piling up, the anyone's argument that we don't need to do anything because we never have before is just going to be shown on its face to be wrong, is being shown on its face to be wrong. And more people are picking up on that. No, that's just absolutely wrong. That's a really stupid way to look at things. That we shouldn't bail water out of the sinking rowboat because we never bailed water out of it before. You know, that's just wrong-headed. So the problem, I think, is that there's not necessarily going to be any larger lesson learned from that. It's just on that one point we'll adapt and change our thinking on it as a group.
Yeah.
And part of the, I think the other challenge that we face is this is a way of thinking that's been around for almost 800 years. So how do you, it's so entrenched in our way of thinking, at least especially in the Western world, that how do you start to separate that and say, no, we need to like actually just work cohesively as humans?
What's also entrenched in our minds is that if someone has a problem or if a group has a problem, you have to hit bottom before you can learn to make sense. If we hit bottom like years ago.
No one's doing anything.
We just keep pulling off the same bottle of whiskey on the rocky ground.
Yep.
We just can't learn. Can we talk about transhumanism, though? I think we've skirted around it enough. It's like the most interesting portion of posthumanism to me. Because posthumanism is like the top of the tier, and then it breaks down into several different schools of thought. Like when it comes to art, science, whatever, philosophy. But transhumanism is like its own thing entirely, where it's humans become something else, basically.
We take ourselves out of evolution.
Yeah. So,
so sick.
It could be the singularity, like AI just takes over and then takes us out. It could be democratic is one way of looking at it, which is where we embrace things like human enhancements and everyone should have access to them. But then there's also a libertarian view of it, which is that, yes, embrace human enhancements, but we need to have a free market on human enhancements.
Right. So they want us to download like 3D printed arms on Reddit.
Yeah.
That will be a very dangerous time when only the wealthy have biological enhancements.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a good transition period. And that's exactly how it'll go. It'll be a very expensive procedures that are hyped and marketed correctly. And people who can afford them will go try them out and it'll spread. And then eventually enough people will have funneled money into it that it will start to trickle down to the less wealthy. And then eventually we'll be a society that has biologically enhanced people, right? But that's exactly how it's going to go. That's how it's always gone. Not saying that that's right because it's how it's always gone. But if it doesn't end up that way, I will be astounded.
I know. Yeah. It's like the same as cell phones. Mm-hmm. Like back 10 years ago, only the wealthy had like iPods or iPhones. Mm-hmm. And now like everyone no one has a flip phone. Everyone has a smartphone.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's coming up. We're going to have lots of robot barons.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're going to take over.
Yeah. For whatever reason, it reminded me, have you guys watched Futurama at all?
Sure.
Yeah.
There's an episode where Richard Nixon is running for president again, and he has like this giant robot body that he goes around terrorizing people with.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I envision.
That's pretty accurate, I'm sure.
Oh, I just imagine now I've got like Mitch McConnell's head in a little fishbowl doing the same thing.
Oh, boy. That's the reality. There's also, I kind of touched on a little bit, there's voluntary human extinction, which would be kind of like, I've been talking a lot about TV, but it'd be like that San Junipero, I can't say it right.
Man, that was so good.
You know, the episode of Black Mirror.
Yes, that was so good.
I was so, spoilers for Black Mirror, so waiting for something bad to happen that I actually looked up the synopsis to see if it had a happy ending before it ended.
Yeah, because if it was going to end badly, oh boy, that would have been the hardest one of all to take, I think. Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that it's such a good story. Have you seen that episode?
Not that specific episode.
Oh, check it out. You. I don't know if it ruined it. Just know that it doesn't have a bad ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a happy story. Mm-hmm.
But it's Black Mirror. I get it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to be
a sense of dread.
I'm not going to walk away feeling empowered and happy. Yeah.
But that's like, if you go and watch that episode, that's kind of one of the ideas behind transhumanism is like, once we start to run out of space or once the technology is good enough, do we want to upload our brains so that someone else can use the Earth or everyone lives in this simulation of an Earth? That's kind of scary. What if we're already in a simulation?
Oh,
you follow that on your show?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you do? Uh-huh. I was going to joke and be like, dude, is one of your existential crises like we're all in a simulation, someone trips on the power cord powering the computer?
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, yes, I guess it would qualify as an existential risk for sure. But it ties into it, the guy who is basically the founder of the field of existential risk analysis, Nick Bostrom, wrote a very famous paper in 2003 on whether we live in a simulation or not. And the way he lays it out is just beautiful. So I did my best to kind of suss it out as much as I could. I like it. It was a good episode.
Yeah. That's cool. If it is about power cords, though, I want to create an ideology around zip ties now. Just worship them.
So I think that's pretty much all I got on post-humanism. Is there anything we want to tack on to the end here?
Thoughts? Hey, this is my part, huh?
I don't know.
Let's see. You were talking about whether we would want to upload ourselves. I think that, too, would probably follow the same progress or the same line as anything, any human enhancement that we end up taking.
The free market?
Yeah, but I also think it's going to kind of be like a movement by 1,000 paper cuts where we, you know, just little by little, and then finally it's just like the next logical step. Of course we would emulate our brains and transfer it up to, you know, a computer for storage because, you know, you want to make a copy of yourself in case something goes wrong here. But I think that for that to happen, any remaining notions that we have about the idea of the soul or some special uniqueness about humans that make humans special is going to have to go away, which is kind of ironic because if we're not special, well, we're the only intelligent life that could possibly put our brains onto a hard drive somewhere. So we are kind of special, but we're going to have to lose the idea that we're special to actually do that. It's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah, and that's where I think that the balance between humanism and post-humanism comes into play because you can't just have polar one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Which is why we're going to launch here. I mean, this could be a big episode for us. If you want to upload your mind to the cloud, you go to strangetheless.com/shop.
And you can upload your mind to the cloud.
For $20 a month, unless you have a promo code. I don't.
I don't.
It's stuff. The promo code is stuff.
Oh, okay, good.
I thought that was for postage.
That's for everything, buddy.
He can't say stamps.com without getting paid. Don't try.
Oh, sorry. Almost had him. That's all I got. I want to take a quick break, take some water. And Josh, I'm going to put you on the spot. I want to know how you think humans are going to wipe themselves out.
Okay.
Hey, John, where can people find us?
StrangerStillShow.com.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Patreon and
whatever.
What just
you're doing a good job already. If you're listening to this,
you're listening to this. You already found us. You're halfway there. Josh, where can people find your podcast?
Well, they can find Stuff You Should Know at stuffyoushouldknow.com and everywhere you find podcasts. And they can find The End of the World with Josh Clark on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, everywhere you get podcasts. And I made my very own hashtag to start a conversation about all this. It's hashtag EOTW Josh Clark. And I'm also on social at Josh Clark because I say a lot.
Hey, you and me both. Yeah. It's gotten to the point now. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but when I'm editing, I recognize the waveform shape of my ums. So it's very easy to identify those.
That's awesome.
I can't wait till you make an algorithm that searches them and just...
I was joking with my wife that like people will put a tattoo of their baby's heartbeat on their wrist.
Oh yeah.
I was like, I'm gonna get the waveform of my tattooed on my wrist.
I was just going to suggest the very same thing. So that means it's a good idea because two
that
people
means
came
it's a
up
great
with
great
it.
Idea.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be beautiful.
And now she can't say no. Poor thing. So I'm curious.
You just did it.
What? Oh, I just said Dang it! I'm trying to get better.
Oh, and quick, I wanted to add. Follow Josh on Instagram at the very least.
Thank you.
I'm not a big Twitter guy, but I'm a big Instagram person. And just seeing Momo and Umi and like you post really funny stuff on there all the time too.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's worth your time.
Thank you. Yes, Momo and Umi and I have a good time posting on Instagram. It is a lot. It's definitely different than Twitter for sure.
Yeah, I like the vibe better.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's the biggest thing. Everyone, I shouldn't say everyone. A lot of bad experiences on Twitter is all I'll say. I just said it again. So Josh.
Yes. What?
Thanks for having my back there. How do you think that humans are going to wipe themselves out?
Oh, man. There's...
After you've done all of this research, you have to have some sort of opinion on it, right?
No, the problem is I have too many opinions on it. It's going to be difficult to pick just one.
Yeah.
I do an episode on artificial intelligence and how that could wipe us out. I do an episode on biotech, which is so scary. It almost seems to stick out in this series because it's not even remotely speculative. It's just this is the way it is. Like we're doing some really nutso stuff that we're treating very recklessly right now. And then I do another episode. To me, is probably the most interesting one. It's also the longest. It's on high energy physics experiments, ill conceived ones, that. In
John.
If things are if physics is understood in the way we think maybe they could be understood, then we're doing some particularly reckless stuff with our particle colliders. But
right.
all these things, like if you notice, there's a theme. We're starting to mess with technology that we're not quite smart enough to use safely yet. And it's something that Carl Sagan called our technological adolescence. And our goal is to make it to technological maturity where we've mastered all this stuff and can use it safely. That's the whole point of my show, is to make it from the point we're at now to that point, and we should be okay after that. But the only way we're going to get there is through science. This the science and the technology that's posing these risks now, they're bringing us to this very dangerous point. But just abandoning science or banning science or some other horrible idea like that is we're doomed. Like the die's already cast. We're going through this, whether we like it or not. And the only thing that can get us out of it, can get us through this 200-year future that's going to be really dicey, is science itself. So one of the main points of the podcast is that we need to support science. Science done right, science with the safety of humanity and the survival of Earth and the universe and life in general done right. And that's basically one of the main points. That and you should treat other people better than you probably are doing.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah. I can't even like that's why you inspired this. I mean, really, we started this podcast because we loved your show. And I think our biggest battle is against cognitive dissonance and pro-science. So, you know, we're perfectly aligned in that sense. I think it's awesome that you're getting that series out there. And it's really cool and really polished.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I love your series, too. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Well, we won't take up too much more of your time. Thank you again for being on.
It's
been an honor being in your digital presence.
Anytime. Like, seriously, if you guys want to do this again, I would love to be on. Like, yes, I just invited myself back, but...
we wouldn't have
We'll think about it. We'll get back to you.
I mean, like, after we hang up, you could be like, God, that guy. What a mistake.
Yeah. So, again, check out Josh's two podcasts. If you haven't, I don't know what the hell you're doing listening to our podcast, but mm-hmm. Go do that. And I don't have anything else to say. I thought I had something else to say, and then it didn't come.
So. I'm still John.
I'm still Nick.
And I'm Josh.
Perfect.
And this is Stranger Still.
I give you...